J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
When a man meets the woman he loves, everything changes. His heart races, his head spins. And suddenly, all the dozens and dozens of women he's sleeping with no longer matter. A few years ago, I found the woman I love, and I've put some of my feelings into this little ode. Every man needs a woman, and I need you, to lift me when I am sad, to comfort me when I am down, to clean me when I am drunk, to walk beside me when I want to look like I am not gay. To walk in front of me when I need someone to act as a human windbreak. To kiss me when I am horny. To massage me when I am tense and or horny. To make me horny when I am not horny. And then to watch me fall asleep. I need you, darling, to clean between my toes when they are not clean to my satisfaction. To pick the nits out of my hair when I have head lice. To try milk for me when I am not sure of the expiration date. To be there when I need you to be there, and to be out of town the rest of the time. My darling, although it may seem sentimental, I want to take this moment to tell you I love you, because I don't want to lose half my stuff. Good night, my love.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Thursday, October 13th, 2022, 26 days until the massive clusterfuck known as the midterm elections come down. I had an interesting lunch yesterday that was filled with politics, and I'll tell you about that. What we try to do here on the podcast is compartmentalize any discussion of politics, and we only have political discussions here when they are absolutely unavoidable, but this one was unavoidable, so I'll get to it a little bit later on. So how did you sleep last night? Maybe a little better than Alex Jones? What do you think? This son of a bitch. Do you know that we had a guy when I posted this thing yesterday with the $1 billion judgment against the talk show host? We had one guy, I won't even say his name, I might be giving the satisfaction to say his name, but I put up the things going, oh, yeah, Alex Jones, $1 billion. One guy, I think his name was George, he protested. He's still on Alex Jones' side, saying that, well, there you go. That's the end of free speech in America. Like, really, that's what you derived out of that. Free speech in America is now no longer a thing. And I just figured I would take the sarcastic route on this. And I was like, you know what, George? You're absolutely right. Because when you can't even go on television and ridicule the parents of a bunch of children who were murdered in cold blood while they were in school and tell lies about them, you're absolutely right. This country has really lost something. The last I checked, it was something like 107 likes on that comment. You know what? I want to do that right now. I want to look at that right now. Hold on one second here. I got to see what happened with that and see if it changed overnight at all. I have two Facebook pages because one filled up, so I needed to create another one. So this one got, let's see, 95 likes. Let me go to the other one. Here's that one. 74 on that one. But that's a pretty good response. Still probably not as much as it ought to be. Well, anyhow, And this judgment yesterday was largely symbolic because the way that things are set up with our American court system, when you're on a civil trial, there is no such thing like as a debtor's prison or something like that. They can't get you on a, you can get you on a criminal charge, but on a civil suit, which is what this was, it's unlikely the families will see much, if anything, at all. You know, I think we have the best judicial system in the world, but it's still not perfect. I want to sort of put a lid on this baseball thing. I said on Monday, I'm not going to make any judgment yet. I'm going to think about this. I was still in shock over the Cardinals' rapid exit from the playoffs, and I wanted to think about it for a couple of days, and I have, and my mind didn't really change. Nothing new. It's really down to three things. Paul Goldschmidt went absolutely cold, lost his mojo, was standing out there. He just didn't look like himself at all and did not produce, and that really, really hurt the Cardinals. Then you got Ryan Helsley, who did a great job in relief during the regular season, but if you've got something wrong with you, especially in the playoffs, for God's sakes, you got to tell somebody. You got to let somebody know that your finger hurts and that you don't have any feeling in your hand, which is what was happening to him. That's not fair to the fans. That's not fair to your teammates. It's not even fair to yourself. And, you know, he shouldn't have been out there, at least not that long. And then we go to Ollie Marmol because, frankly, in my view, this series was lost in game one. Doesn't mean Ollie Marmol's a bad manager. I think he did a great job with the team during the regular season. He fucked up in the playoffs. He fucked up in game one. And it really cost them, and that's pretty much it. There's a couple other things that happened here and there, but those are the three big elements, so that's pretty much it. You know, the Cardinals, for all of the good things that they're about and all the thrills and the chills that they've given us and all the championship years and just, you know, all the stuff that the Cardinals do that make us big fans, for all of that, that organization is still savagely brutal from time to time because I'm still pissed about this Mike Schilt thing. And Joe Maddon yesterday, former manager of the Cubs and Florida, and he's running around California and all that sort of stuff. He's like, I would like to manage again. So anybody who wants to talk to me, that's fine. Why isn't anybody calling Mike Schilt? Just Google Mike Schilt and look at his winning percentage and look at everything that he did and getting into the playoffs and the whole thing. It's criminal. It's absolutely criminal that he is not in a managerial position again. He deserved to keep his job with the Cardinals. But I was going through some archives last night and just totally, completely dumb luck stumbled on this. And I remember this vividly because we were at spring training, me and the U-Man, sitting in the press box at Roger Dean Stadium in Jupiter, Florida. 2005. So this is March of 2005. You have to sort of put yourself in that mindset. You'll hear the setup, and then you'll understand where I'm going with this. But this is really, really entertaining and fun to listen to because at that time, Albert Pujols was still sort of an unknown commodity. We still weren't sure where that whole thing was going with Albert. We had just had the exit of Mike Matheny from the Cardinal organization, and there was this guy, this catcher coming up that not a lot of people had heard of, and it's just fun to listen to this. It's one of the nice things about spring training is you don't have that daily grind and all the pressure, and so everybody's in a little more relaxed mood, and one of those guys was Walt Jocketty, the general manager of the Cardinals at that time. Another guy who just got blindsided by the Cardinal organization, and they put Harry Potter in charge of things. Walt went on to Cincinnati, and of course you know where the thing with Jeff Luhnow went. Players used to call him Harry Potter. It bothered him, I guess, because he ended up getting contact lenses because when he wore those glasses, he looked like an adult Harry Potter, and he probably didn't like that very much. And then, of course, he goes on to Houston where they have the huge scandal, and, you know, so that didn't exactly work out. But I love Walt. Walt was always really, really kind to us and good with his time. And I ran into him when Cincinnati was in town a couple of years ago. I was out on the field prior to the game, and we were talking, and he's just a great guy. Nothing wrong with sabermetrics, nothing wrong at all, but I still like that sort of cigar-chomping, old-school type attitude to things, too, and that was Walt. This is real quick. It's only a couple of minutes. We go back to 2005 spring training in Jupiter.
All right. Now, let me play devil's advocate here because I always say I got to be the guy to sort of say things like this. Can you imagine if somebody that was in our division, the Chicago Cubs, the Houston Astros, were coming into the 05 season having lost their starting catcher, their starting shortstop, their starting second baseman, one of their key short relief men,
starting pitcher,
thank you. Do you imagine what we'd be saying? We would practically be dismissing them, saying they don't have a chance. Right. And yet, that's the description of the 05 St. Louis Cardinals, and I don't detect any concern on the part of the fans back home.
Well, I think the reason, JC, is we still have a strong core on our club. And you look at it's anchored with Pujols, Roland, Edmonds, Walker, Reggie Sanders, and the young catcher Molina is going to be a great one. He's got a chance to be very, very good.
There's no question that he is ready.
I think, Tony and I were talking about it the other night, and Dave Duncan's been very impressed with the way he's related to the pitchers, and the pitchers are happy to throw to him, and I think that's an important part of it. So, yeah, you know, we still have to see what we have up the middle with Grzelcyk and Eckstein. Eckstein is not going to be Renteria, we know that, but he's a very good player, a very steady player, and Grzelcyk, I think, also will do a great job.
But let me go back to that core now.
Right.
Reggie Sanders, 38 years old, Jim Evans, 35 years old, Larry Walker, still yet to see action with back trouble.
Right.
Pujols with the continuing aggravation of the plantar fasciitis. Scott Rolen with a bad knee.
Oh, see, you're starting to sound like the Post-Dispatch. No, first of all, let me try and tone that down a little bit. First of all, Reggie's in great shape. Reggie's in better shape than probably anybody.
So I've heard him say that.
He's incredible. I mean, the workout routine that he did this offseason, our trainer Barry Weinberg went down, tried to do it and couldn't. He spent 5 minutes and had to quit. But
questions about David Eckstein, who only went on to be the MVP. Tony La Russa said that David Eckstein was the toughest ball player he ever managed. But hearing some of those names from 2005, this is why JC keeps archives, because every once in a while, pulling stuff out like that really, really is fun. One more baseball note here. Adam Wainwright's playing with us now because it's obvious that Molina and Pujols aren't coming back. And Adam Wainwright seems to be leaving the question open as to whether or not he will return, which is silly because when you start to think about it, given their performance, including down the stretch, Yadier Molina, Albert Pujols have something left in the tank. There's something to be said for going out on top, okay? And that's what these guys are doing. Adam Wainwright is the only one of the three who indicated they were going to retire at the end of the year, whose performance really did wane, no pun intended, in the final analysis and coming down the stretch. You know, Adam just was not good. So the one guy who probably should clearly retire is the one guy who apparently is still keeping open the possibility of coming back. I don't think this is a good idea. Go out on top, Adam. Wait 5 years and go into the Hall of Fame with your two buddies. Can you imagine what that's going to be like 5 years from now in Cooperstown? You imagine if all three get in on the first ballot? Cooperstown will look like Keener Plaza on opening day in St. Louis. So late July of, 2022? So late July of 2027. Be nice if it happens. Oh, and people were already starting to poo-poo the idea. Adam Wainwright went on Twitter and explained that his performance down the stretch, that there was a reason for it, that he was hit. What was that, on the toe or the knee or something like that? Coming down the stretch somewhere with a couple of weeks left in the game. And what it did is, because of the pain in his leg, foot, toe, knee, whatever it was, when he would land on that, it would hurt and it was shortening his stride. And that was affecting his pitches. And that's why he was no good down the stretch. And people were already throwing rocks at him, going, this is a bunch of bullshit. Well, I've been pitching since I was, 8 years old, and I've been studying pitching for longer than that at 7 years old. And, you know, my uncle was a pitcher in the major leagues, and I've always enjoyed talking to pitchers in Major League Baseball, and really at all levels. I just like, and I still pitch. I pitched the other night.
what Adam Wainwright is saying is absolutely true. It is absolutely true. You know, it's usually somebody who hasn't been on an athletic field in 50 years who will just get on social media and start going, you're full of shit. Just amazing how people have no knowledge but plenty of opinions. It's the world we live in now with social media. But let's remember this. Dizzy Dean had at least a few more years in his career, at least a few more years. But a player by the name of Earl Averill hit a line drive off of Dizzy Dean's toe, broke the toe and really screwed up his foot. And Dizzy Dean, being a bullhead that he was, tried to come back too early after the injury and had to alter his delivery because of the pain in his toe. And he just figured, I'll just work around it. I'll come around and do this. And instead of landing the way I have my entire career, I'll just bring my foot over here so that my toe doesn't hurt. Well, in the process, he screwed up his arm. He hurt his arm. And that's all they used to say back then. He had a sore arm. You know, now you hear about the medial lateral contusion with the whole, you know, all this kinesiology and everything. Back then, they would just say he had a sore arm. He had to quit. He had a sore arm. And that's what ended his career early. He had to alter his delivery because of his sore toe. So this shit is real. It's very real. So before you start making fun of him and, you know, it is amazing. A guy like Adam Wainwright, who doesn't go around lying, you know, he doesn't have a history of lies. I have to deal with this all the time. I don't get in trouble, and I have not gotten in trouble over the years because they tell lies. Nobody's ever really accused me of lying. I get in trouble for being too honest. But now we live in the world of social media, and people are always accusing you of lying. And it's like, since when do I lie? First of all, I don't really care what you think. I just tell you what I know. I tell you what you know, what my experiences have been all the time. I'm preaching to the choir here, because if you guys who come and listen to the podcast every day, you're not in this crowd that's like that. So I probably shouldn't even be talking about this. Oh, and I lied. One more baseball note, and that is, you got to wonder what Pete Rose is thinking these days. Kicked out of baseball because of gambling, and now in his home ballpark in Cincinnati, there's going to be like a little substation of a casino. So you'll be able to go to the baseball game, get your hot dog, get your beer, and on your way to your seats, you stop off and you place a bet right in the ballpark. Like I said, Pete Rose gone. Who do I have to blow around here to get into the Hall of Fame? What was the company? Hold on here. What was the company? JPMorgan Chase Bank, cutting ties with Kanye. Well, you know, a anti-Semitic rant will do that all the time. And Eric Schmidt, right here in Missouri, tweeted support for Kanye's anti-Semitic rant. And then somebody told him, do you know what he actually said? And they're like, no, what? And then they read it to him, and he was like, maybe I should take that down, which he did. Ready, shoot, aim. Nice work, Eric. January 6th hearings continue today in Washington. We are told, this was the breaking news last night, that somebody the January 6th committee had originally interviewed and then brought back after some video showed up. And they brought it back and they finally got the guy or the woman, whoever it was, to admit that Trump had told them to move a bunch of boxes. So that testimony changed. You'll hear that. And they said they got some other new stuff today, which brings us to my lunch yesterday. Very good friend of mine, somebody I've known for, I don't know, almost 50 years. And we usually just sit there and tell old war stories and old radio stories, and we have a lot of laughs. And yesterday, something unusual happened, and as the subject turned to politics. And my friend is, he calls himself an independent, but he's really a Republican, and evidenced by the fact that in our discussion, which got a little volatile from time to time, but we're, you know, we're friends. But, you know, he calls himself an independent, but argued every point as a Republican would have. So it's like, you call yourself an independent, but everything you're saying is indicative of a leaning towards the Republican Party, which is fine. I don't have a problem with Republicans, other than I just think they're wrong about the way they do things. And also, I don't think like Republicans think. Democrats and Republicans just don't think about things the same way. It doesn't make either side a bad person or a bad group. It's just like, ask somebody how to pound a nail into a 2x4, and you'll get 10 different responses and 10 different descriptions of what the best way to do it is. So it shouldn't surprise anybody that when it comes to politics, there's just a wide array of opinions as to how things should be done. And, you know, the commentators and, you know, all the pundits and everything have done this for a long time, and I'll do it right here, too. There's a difference between a Republican and a Trump Republican. I've dated Republican women in the past. They're fun, by the way. I have Republican friends. Hey, you spar with them every once in a while over something, but for the most part, it's just pointless because nobody's mind is changing these days. But it is interesting to note that my friend who I had lunch with yesterday, we got into, a very heated discussion about politics, that he's not watching the January 6th hearings and hasn't watched any of them. So we're sitting there at the bar yesterday finishing up lunch, and I'm telling him stuff that he's hearing for the first time. So I don't know where to go with something like that. A different Republican friend of mine over lunch about 6 months ago said the same thing. Do you watch both sides? And I'm like, yes, I do, but there's more than both sides. There's three sides. You got Democrats, you got Republicans, and you got Trump Republicans. But I do, yes, I watch both or all three sides. That seemed to surprise him. I don't think he was anticipating that answer. But there was a study over the summer where they, you know, one of these outfits that does a lot of polling and political research and everything, very respected bunch. They got like 20 people who were Fox News viewers, and they put them in a room and they started showing them the other side. And almost to a man or a woman, as the case may be, upon hearing things that they had never heard before, they started to change their opinions. And you can laugh if you want. Go ahead and laugh, because they laughed at Bill Maher, too, a year before the last presidential election, when Bill Maher was saying to Eric Holder, the former attorney general under the Obama administration, he said, you know, if Trump loses, he's not leaving. He's not leaving. And everybody was just sort of laughing that off. Well, guess what? All of a sudden, it wasn't so funny. And so I will say this now, and I can't claim to have come up with this on my own. This is sort of an adaptation of something that I did here on one of the 24-hour news channels. And that's basically this. In 2 years, this is assuming that Trump runs and stays in for the entire thing. And there's some question about that, too, because what's going to happen here with DeSantis? You could very easily have a situation where you get into a primary and or debate situation, and people just go, you know what, I just think it's better to move on, and Ron DeSantis is our guy. What does Trump do then? Does he stay in, split the vote, and which would cause a Democratic landslide in 2024? And this shit's going to be really interesting what happens here. But like I said, I'm going to say this now, and you can laugh if you want, but somebody said, and I believe this is true, if Trump runs and loses, there's going to be blood in the streets. And if Trump runs and wins, there's going to be blood in the streets. Because if he loses, you're going to have all the same shit that happened on January 6th. If he wins, I think it's going to be one of those situations where you go to like Gainesville, Florida or something, and the college team wins the national championship and they burn the place down. And then the following year, they play and they lose, and they burn the place down. They burn the place down whether they win or lose, and I think that's what the situation is going to be like. And so, for the first time in J.C. Corcoran's life, he may be purchasing a gun. Yeah, that's how my lunch went yesterday. Hopefully, yours was lighter. Anyhow, the hearings, they say the coverage starts at 11 o'clock St. Louis time, but I don't, you know, I think that's the pregame show. They got a red carpet. Saturday night, I walked in there once for the Bill Clinton impeachment hearings, and they set up a red carpet with like Todd Newton and Melissa Rivers, and the red carpet thing, Ken Starr shows up on the red carpet. They did it like it was the E Channel. It was very, very funny. Up until they did the autopsy on Robin Williams, I can tell you I had never heard of it. I'm sure that 95% of the rest of the world had never heard of this disease either. It's called Lewy syndrome, L-E-W-Y, and it makes you delusional. You have hallucinations. You have trouble with your cognitive abilities. You have tremors. It's just an awful, awful disease. I had never even heard of it before. And it was happening to Robin Williams, and Robin was just like, fuck this. I'm taking myself out. And so he did. Still hard to believe that Robin is not with us. Well, yesterday I found out it happened again. The guy who was my program director at my college radio station, WKDI in DeKalb, Illinois, when I was at Northern Illinois University, found out that he died last week of the same disease that struck Robin Williams. This guy, by the way, went on from Northern Illinois University to briefly running a couple of radio stations in Chicago, and is generally credited, and this is not something I make up, you could look this up, generally credited with discovering and promoting Genesis. You know, when you're working in Topeka, Kansas, you can jump up and down and go, oh man, there's this band, how come nobody's playing this? How come nothing happens? But when you're in a major market like Chicago, New York, LA, and you say, no, I think I got something here, you need to check this out. And then you start playing it, and other people go, hey, well, they're playing it in Chicago. And then pretty soon you've got a wave of activity on this whole thing, and that's what happened. So my old buddy, Bob Gelms, and he and I did not get along particularly well when I was in college. I had aspirations of becoming involved in much more commercial radio. And the college radio stations just wanted to do all this, you know, underground. That's far out, man. Get some Genesis to play for you in just a little while. How y'all doing? You know, that kind of crap. And I'm on the air in the morning, you know, playing turkey noises leading up to Thanksgiving break. So we didn't get along that well. But I respected him, and he was a good guy. And again, if you like Phil Collins and everything else that comes along with it, my old program director from college had a major hand in sort of getting Genesis the kind of respect and notice and things like that that were required at that time for the band to really bust out. Channel 2 has got to do something. Man, for the longest time, there was a guy by the name of Spencer Koch who ran Channel 2. And I worked for him briefly back in, what was it, like 2009 or something like that. And I was doing those commentaries on the 5 and the 9 o'clock news on Fox 2. And in a lot of ways, Spencer was the best boss I ever had. And Fox 2, out of all of the television stations, if you talk to the actual journalists and the employees, they'll tell you that that was the place to be. Out of all the TV stations in St. Louis, Fox 2, that's where you wanted to be. And it was largely because of the way Spencer Koch ran the place. Well, he retired a couple of years ago. And it just seems like Fox 2 has gone into the shitter. And I feel bad saying that, too, because I've got many friends who work in the Fox 2 newsroom, including the management, the news director. These are all friends of mine. But, you know, you got to call it the way you see it. And I'm going to be really, really surprised if their numbers don't really take a hit here over the course of the next year. And it's going to be interesting to see whether the audience gravitates to a different station or whether they just stop watching television in the morning. But they got big trouble. And the other thing they're doing, and I still find it very, very hard to believe, the people that I know in management at Fox 2, because there's a bunch of new people, obviously, but the people that I know that are still there would not be the ones responsible for this. But this preaching that Tim Izell is doing at the end of the 5 o'clock news. So it's about 5:55 every day. And Tim Izell, who's a nice guy, and I like Tim. I worked in the same newsroom with him for a little over a year. He's a great guy. But shortly after I left, he went to divinity school, and he became a preacher. And now he's preaching on the news. This is insane. Nobody does that. That's not even what the news is supposed to be. Now they call it like inspiration. It's preaching. He's talking about God. That shit does not belong on the local television news. Nobody, you can go around the country, there's nobody doing that. Why are we doing it in St. Louis? Jesus. Here is a missed opportunity. Elon Musk now selling a fragrance called Burnt Hair. $100 a bottle. The website calls it, quote, the essence of repugnant desire, end quote. No word on what it actually smells like. Now, if you're Elon Musk, wouldn't it be a lot easier to call your product Musk Oil? Because it already exists. And by the way, when I was in college, there were a couple of girls I dated, and they wear these little chokers. You know, like these little things, almost looks like a dog collar, but much, you know, classier. Very, very sexy. A woman showed up wearing a choker and wearing Musk Oil. I sort of like became immediately incapacitated. And I'll bet you it would still work today, but nobody wears that stuff anymore. Earlier this year, Stephen Colbert announced that he was hosting a celebrity pickleball tournament called Pickled. And now we know who's playing. 16 competitors, and the biggest names include Will Ferrell, Emma Watson, Sugar Ray Leonard, Kelly Rowland, Aisha Tyler. Oh, do I love her. She's tall. She's big. Tig Notaro. Poor excuse for a stand-up comedian. The rest of the lineup is, got this country singer Jimmy Allen. That Phil, what does he say, Keegan or Kogan, the guy from The Amazing Race, he's going to be in it. Anyhow, it's a two-hour show going to air November 17th on CBS. On a related note, Tom Brady has joined the growing number of pro athletes buying professional pickleball teams. We have two baseball games remaining on our schedule. I'm going to play those games, and I'm going to go ahead and do the pickleball thing. You know, when it first started, I was like, this is like for old people. And then I realized I am an old people. So it does look like fun, and there's a social aspect to it too, so I'm going to be investigating. I don't know how to do it. I guess you just get online and go, hey, how do you join a pickleball team or league or whatever it is. We've got football tonight, but it's on Amazon. Be ready for that. The Bears hosting the Washington Commanders. We have the series premiere of The Watcher. That's on Netflix after Bobby Cannavale and Naomi Watts move into their dream home. They are harassed by letters from a stalker calling himself The Watcher. Again, that's on Netflix. Late night tonight, Trevor Noah, who has announced, by the way, that his last Daily Show is going to be December 8th. He's on with Jimmy Fallon tonight. George Clooney and Julia Roberts. This movie must suck because they're popping up together all over the place. That's the new thing. You had Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell making the rounds. That's the new thing. You go on talk shows as a pair instead of just one person. Anyhow, George Clooney, Julia. They're on Kimmel. Stephen Colbert's got Ed Sheeran, Jamie Lee Curtis. I'm with James Corden. Johnny Knoxville pops up with Seth Meyers. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, says she's not surprised that Madonna has come out as at least bisexual because she said that Madonna once hit on her girlfriend. There is a teaser for something called Spirited. It's a new take on A Christmas Carol, the Charles Dickens thing, and it stars Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell. I will post that at the end of the show today. The trailer is out. Birthdays today. Tiffany Trump is 29. She's the daughter that Donald Trump had with Marla Maples, 29. Himesh Patel, the star of Yesterday, the movie about the non-existence of the Beatles, 32 today. AOC, New York Congressman, 33. Sacha Baron Cohen is 51. Nancy Kerrigan, remember her? 53. Kate Walsh from Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice, 55. Jerry Rice, arguably one of the very, very small handful of people that you'd have to say amongst the greatest NFL receivers of all time, 60 today. Marie Osmond, 63. John Ford Coley, as in England Dan, and 74 today. Sammy Hagar is 75, and he can't drive 55. And Paul Simon is 81. The actual event that led to the 1993 movie Alive about the Uruguay rugby team crashing into the Andes, and then they had to resort to cannibalism to stay alive. 1972, on this date, 50 years ago today. 1988, scientists announced that the Shroud of Turin is a fake, 34 years ago today. And in 2016, 60 years ago, Bob Dylan was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature for, and here's the quote, having created new poetic expressions within the great American song tradition. Let's listen to an example of that from Bob Dylan. And by the way, this is really him. It's not an imitator.
The Wizard of Oz, Osborne Earl, that's his name, brought a whole new level to the game. We're talking about Ozzy. No, not that Ozzy. We're talking about the Wizard of Oz. The MVP, Osborne Earl Smith. He was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2002. In 2003, he was inducted into the St. Louis Walk of Fame. Let's take a seventh inning stretch.
Let's actually do more than that, Bob. Let's put a lid on this. The J.C. Corcoran podcast for Thursday, October 13th, 2022 is in the can. 26 days until the midterm clusterfuck. We're here every weekday morning right about 7 o'clock. It's absolutely free, as you know. We archive everything and continue to spread the word, please. It really does help us out. Email me, JC at JCOnTheLine.com. Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. This is the anniversary back in 1985 of Vince Coleman, one of the fastest men on earth, being run over by a tarp going 2.5 miles an hour. Strange things happen in this world. That's it. Have a great day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.